Lambs Media is proudly sponsored by OnlySuperNews.com. News to make you feel good. Lambs Media, sponsored by OnlySuperNews.com.
Hello, good evening, and a warm welcome to week 8 of the Lambs Media Weekly Quarantine Podcast. I'm your host, Harry Hanslow, for tonight's show. I hope everyone is well and staying safe. The idea behind these podcasts is to bring new content, including interviews, questions to the fans, and to raise awareness of all the competitions, challenges, and content which can be found over this period. Coming up tonight, we have interviews from two first-team players, along with a chat with Alex Smith and a discussion with Kev Clark about the return of Premier League football. First up tonight, we caught up with Rhys Hones.
Hello, listeners. I'm joined by Rhys Hones. Hello, Rhys. Thanks for joining us today.
No problem. How are you?
Yeah, I'm well, thank you. How about yourself?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks.
Good, good, good. Right, I'd like to, first and foremost, start on a personal note, if I may. I hope you and your family are safe and well at the moment, and wondered how you're coping with the current restricted lifestyle that we are all having to become accustomed to at the moment.
Me personally, I'm fine and the family are good. People are struggling at this time, but for me personally, I'll be able to get quite a bit done in my garden. I've not long moved in, so I'll be able to get quite a bit done around the house, so it's not too bad.
Yeah, no, it's, if nothing else, it's given us all an opportunity to perhaps do a little bit more at home that we probably wouldn't have done in under normal circumstances, would we, I guess?
Yeah.
So, no, good, good, good. So for those who perhaps don't know, can you give us a lowdown on your career to date, where your football journey began and the subsequent clubs that you've played for?
Yeah, well, I started at Stevenage and then I was there until I was 17. So from a young age up until 17, and then I ended up going straight into non-league football, which was probably the best thing I could have done, to be fair.
Yeah, sure.
But then staying the youth football and then gone straight into non-league football and went to Barton in Bedfordshire. They don't have many fans, but it was a good learning experience for me. I'd gone from playing against a lot of kids to playing against men at the time that were double my size, so I had to learn quickly, or you'd end up getting released again and again and probably end up quitting. So went straight into that, was there for 2 years, and it's quite good, really. They were, when I signed for them, they were a team that was, they were always fighting for relegation, and we had a new young manager come in and he made quite a few young signings, and we ended up finishing in the playoffs 1 year and just outside in the other. And then got a move to Royston, who were in the league below the one we're in at the moment, and was there for a year. Had a good year, I think scored about 20-odd goals and won 20-odd pens, and got a move to St Albans, that was. And, I didn't really get the opportunities that I wanted to get there, but at the time they were doing quite well. I think it was like second in the league, and I kind of fell out of love with football, really. And
enjoyed
turning up and training and games. And luckily, I knew the manager at Biggleswade knew me, Chris Nunn, at the time. And luckily, St Albans were, it was okay for me. They let me go on loan to start with, and ended up going to Biggleswade, done really well. And they let me stay there till the end of the season. And I think from signing Christmas, and we were struggling quite bad at the time, but they had some good players. They had like Connor Hall, who's now at Harrogate, and Iniesta Young, who's at Dover. So we had a good side, and they signed Michael Richards at Christmas with me, who I won the league with the Kettering last year. And we ended up finishing about 5 points outside of playoffs. And then I signed for Kettering after that bit, because I think we'd done quite well. So I'm for Kettering. And first year we finished, I think, second or third, but we had Hereford in our league who romped it. They'd got about 110 points. And then won it the following year. And now find myself at Tamworth.
Yeah, no, well, say as you've touched on, you joined Tamworth at the beginning of the 2019-20 season from Kettering.
Yes.
And on that particular season, you finished as the club's top goal scorer and helped the club win the division and promotion to the National League North. So what prompted the move to Tamworth?
I loved playing for Kettering. I did love being there, but there was, at the time, there was some troubles off the field that are quite well documented now. But yeah, I couldn't stay there and play under him again. And it was the same for quite a few of the players. And I think it got quite late on into the summer, into midsummer, and we was coming to the start of pre-season, and I knew I wasn't going to play for him again. So I made a decision. I was like, if he's still going to be there, I can't be there. So
yeah, I'm guessing we're talking to Marcus Law, formerly of Tamworth, the manager. Then, yeah, there was a bit of an exodus, wasn't there, obviously yourself and Nathaniel came to us, and a few others came to teams in our division, didn't they? I think one of the guys, Declan Towers, went to Dunedin as well, and a few others.
There was a few. We were leaving it as late as we could, and then we ran out of time, so we had to make a decision whether to stay and carry on or leave and go elsewhere. And I made the decision to leave and go to Tamworth, and then he ends up getting I don't know whether he resigned or got the chop about a week later, but then a lot of us had already signed for other clubs, and then that was it.
Yeah. No, fair enough. So you finished the season making 39 appearances, which was actually the most appearances within the squad, and you scored 7 goals in all competitions. How do you feel the season went for you on a personal point of view?
It was a weird one for me because I've gone for the previous 2 years before signing for Tamworth. I played in a very central role, and then I'd never met Andy or Gaz before signing for them, and I've never come across them in non-league football, and I've been in this league for a few years now. So we kind of had to learn on the job about each other from quite early, seeing as we never worked with each other before. So from a personal, I've gone from playing very central and picking up the ball 20, 30 yards away from goal and doing a lot of work in the 18-yard box, and then playing out wide here, and then you're in a four pretty much when you don't have the ball. So by the time I was picking up the ball, I was 60, 70 yards away from goal. So it was a lot different to what I have been doing. And I felt I struggled a lot at the start. But then as the season went on, it did get a bit easier. We got to a place where it just worked. So it was okay in the end.
Yeah, certainly. Like that, certain towards the end of the season, or you know, it was close to the end of the season, we definitely seemed to be playing a lot better, and everything seemed to start fitting together as well, didn't it? But certainly from a supporter's perspective, anyway.
Yeah, definitely.
But, good. So I know many people associated with the club believe we would would have won the division under different circumstances. What do you think are the key components that made us one of the top teams in our league?
I'd definitely say that probably down to the system for me. I think if you look at how we are or how the players in our squad, Bez, I think, is on, I don't know how many goals he's on, probably on about 20 odd, but half of them are,
I think it was about 18, but yeah,
penalties. So, yeah, yeah. So if you look at the at our team, like the goals are shared out very consistently throughout the squad.
Yeah.
So it shows you that the system that we play works, and we haven't got someone getting us out of trouble week in, week out. Where at Kettering, I think there was only a couple of us that were scoring goals. So it felt like if we didn't score, we wouldn't win games. Or so I think, rather than playing quality as it was at Kettering, it was definitely the system that we work in here that works the best, I think, here. Andy and Smudge. Tom Bailey for bringing him in.
No, definitely. I think Tom's had a big hand on some of the signs you made this summer just gone, hasn't he? So most definitely. So you're 28 now, Reece, and you're at the age where you would be considered to be in your prime. What ambitions do you have, and what would you still like to achieve in football?
Well, I've been quite fortunate in almost every team. I've never been involved in a mid-table side or a relegation side. I've always been fighting at the top end of the table. So as long as I still feel fine to do that, and I still feel fit, then I still am hungry to win things. And I genuinely believe if the season hadn't ended quickly, I would be sat here today with another league title. So yeah. I still have aspirations of doing that, and hopefully I can do that again.
No, brilliant. What would you say would have been your highlight of the 2019-20 season?
I would go probably with the Hereford game. That was, it meant a lot to a lot of people. The chairman, obviously, as well, for the money reasons. But he, you could see after the game, there's a lot of people that were like the coaching staff and some of the players that haven't been involved in games like that before. And it meant a lot to quite a few people. So I'd say the Hereford game, personally, that was a good one. And I scored a pen, a dodgy pen, but I scored one.
Still went in. That was the most important thing on the night. But no, I kind of thought you'd probably say that, to be honest. I think all the other guys that have been interviewed have said a similar sort of thing. But I think from a supporter's point of view as well, I don't think last season, I mean, he could have done had the season have finished and carried on, but certainly that was probably the best night.
Yeah.
I
think in previous years in the FA Cup, you lot have really struggled, haven't you, as well? So
Yeah, most definitely.
Start and do well. That was quite good.
No, it's certainly always nice to have a decent cup, isn't it? So now the dust has settled, what is your take on the Football Association's decision to expunge non-league football from step three downwards so promptly?
I've always said that they just rushed the decision so fast. It was we kind of knew it was going to happen with the governing bodies and the FA. They've always felt like non-league football doesn't really matter. Where with the other leagues, you've seen that they've taken their time, and even though they might have brought the season to an end for the national league. But we felt like ours was very rushed. And I'm not saying that points per game is the best way or a playoff would have been the best way, but I genuinely believe that null and void is the worst decision out of them all. I think it's just a coward's way to have to say null and void, because they'll turn around and say, oh, you can't predict or let a computer decide who was going to win the league. But that's rubbish, because there was teams in non-league who had already mathematically been promoted, and they still said it was null and void. So the only reason why they cancelled it is because they couldn't be bothered to deal with us. So
now I certainly got that impression myself. I think the guys interviewed Aaron Ford last week, and he said a similar thing along the lines of, we played the best part of 80 odd percent of the season. How can you pull the plug on that. And I think it's very hard to see it any other way, isn't it? Really, when you look at it like that, like team
crazy.
Promoted and
there was 9 months in a season. We played 7 of them, so that's not enough to decide. Oh, okay, they're better than others. And I know people who were part of relegation in the team in the relegation zone, and even though they were happy that it was null and void, they said that if they had said, "Oh, it's done by points per game," the harsh reality of it is that they weren't good enough to be a part of this league next year, but they still are, they're going to be. So I don't know. Yeah. Reward the sides for doing badly, but punish the sides for doing well. I don't understand that.
It definitely feels like it's reward for failure, doesn't it, for a lot of the teams that, like as you say, weren't you know, over the course of 7 and a bit months, weren't good enough to be in the division, were they? But it is what it is, I guess. And you know, what's done is done, as they say.
Exactly. Everyone moves on.
So drawing to a close, is there a message you'd like to pass on to the supporters?
Stay safe, really. Stay safe, and I'm sure it won't be too long before they're able to go and watch games again. I don't believe in all the scaremongers saying that football won't be back and it won't be as normal again. It will be. It'll just take a bit of time and everything will go back to normal.
Yeah, no, I kind of feel like that myself. Like, you look at the obviously the Premier League, and I think La Liga is starting up very soon. Bundesliga has already started. So football is returning to some degree, and it can't be long before non-league gets the nod again. I think the only concern, as you say, would be the supporters all congregating together around the grounds. They're perhaps going to have to find ways maybe to segregate people a little bit, perhaps.
Definitely, I agree. I think it will be fine. And it, like you say, if they're all starting back up within a couple months, when was the last time we played? March something, and we're back playing football again in June. So I think our season might not be August, but I can't see it being too far away from there.
No, well, we all hope so. So thank you again very much for your time, Reece, and hopefully, as you say, we'll see you back on the pitch soon enough, doing what you do best.
Pleasure. Thank you very much.
A few weeks ago on the show, I was talking about how the Bundesliga had restarted in Germany. There's obviously been a lot in the news in the last week or so now about football restarting in England. And joining us on the show tonight to just talk about this in a little bit more detail is Lambs Media's Kev Clark.
Hi, Harry.
How are you doing, Kev?
Not too bad, thank you, mate. And I hope, obviously, all the listeners are safe and well. It's nice to have some restrictions lifted, obviously, and what seems like a little bit more normality around us.
Absolutely. So what can you tell us about the Premier League restarting and football in England?
It's obviously being proposed that a restart will be Wednesday, the 17th of June. It's been a 3-month hiatus now. But when football does restart at the Premier League level, there's 92 games left to play. And of course, they'll be behind closed doors. And I think they've still got the issue to sort out of the venues, the neutral venues that these games will be played at.
Yeah, so obviously, there's a big concern at the minute, specifically about teams like Liverpool. If they do win the title, I think they have mathematically won it. Am I right in saying that, or are there a few games left to play?
I think they needed 2 more wins, but without doing the maths, I'm not sure. But they're basically home and hosed, aren't they?
Yeah. So if like they do go on and win it, there's the big issue of fans congregating outside the stadiums and still. So is that the idea of a neutral ground?
Yeah, I believe so. It's just a control measure. And that's what it's all about. Risk assessing and trying to put in measures where you can control crowds and you can control contact and potential spread of COVID-19. But it's just very, very difficult. And I'm sure many listeners would agree that to have a contact sport and a spectator sport going ahead, it just seems very difficult to be able to manage it and to do it effectively.
But there's been plenty of measures that have been taken place by the Football Association and the Premier League, though. I mean, they've been through three or four rounds of testing. Am I right in thinking now?
Yeah, it's great, actually, to see that obviously the measures that there are in place now around players, clubs and officials are working. There were 12 positive tests in the first three rounds. I think there were over 2,700 tests done in the first three rounds. The fourth round of testing last week was 1,130 players and staff, and there were no positive tests. So that all bodes really well. And of course, the Bundesliga has been going for a couple of weeks now, and that seems to be a really good model. So once again, we look towards Germany and we think, yeah, that's the way forward. So you have to give a lot of credit to the FA, the Premier League, the people involved in this sense that it does seem to be working. And obviously what happens right at the top end of the game, some will filter down through the leagues, the National League, and of course down to our level and below. But some things are just simply not, we're not able to implement at our level due to financial restrictions and other practical reasons.
Yeah, that sort of brings me on to my next point, really. There's been a lot of, you know, this idea of raising morale and raising the nation's spirits by bringing the Premier League back. But what's the sort of feeling around the Championship and the leagues below? Because obviously, up, as you said, at the top end, there's not really much difference.
I think a lot of clubs are just anxious to know. I mean, I don't run a football club, and I'd hate to be in this scenario. I can only give my personal opinion on this from watching the news and reading articles. But Rick Parry, for argument's sake, the EFL chairman, has threatened legal action if there happens to be a situation, which is possible, where there's no promotion or relegation between the Premier League and the Championship. And he claims there would be outrage. Now, if the season starts again with the Premier League and there's an outbreak of coronavirus and then it has to be shut down again and we simply run out of time, the fixtures are getting just put further back into the year, that would affect next season, this year's FA Cup final, etc. Then there comes a situation where there has to be an end to the season. So you could have some chairmen, some clubs wanting relegation promotion, some not. I think I read somewhere that up to 10 clubs in the Premier League, 10 member clubs, would actually say they wanted to scrap relegation if the Premier League season could not be finished. And you can only imagine the knock-on effect then down through the pyramid.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's been said about the, I know you touched on it there, the FA Cup, I saw something yesterday that it could still be played.
Yeah, I think they're planning to play the FA Cup final on the 1st of August. And there are reports suggesting that it could be up to 20,000 fans, so 10,000 from each side, at Wembley, actually watching the game. But obviously that's to try and keep the social distancing, but still have fans at the showpiece final. And that would be fantastic to have fans there for obviously all the right reasons. But also it would prove, if that went well, that it could be done. If that was implemented and it went well and there was no, I would sincerely hope that track and trace is a lot more robust and over its teething problems and implemented a lot more widely by then. But we're talking a couple of months ahead still, Harry, and there's so many things that can happen in intervening period that could change these proposals. But it's good to know that the FA Cup final is going to be going ahead and, you know, it will be, by the look of it, in front of fans.
Now, yesterday, the FA announced some updated guidance on football activity, and they've said that teams can now train in groups of six as long as they stick to 2 meter social distancing at all times. Things like sharing of equipment should be kept to a minimum. Strong practices of hand hygiene and physical contact with anyone outside your household is not permitted. So obviously this is talking about teams lower down the pyramid now, which haven't been rigorously tested through five different stages of stages, and obviously limiting coaching to small groups of up to six people. We've still not heard anything about our league resuming potentially, well, all the leagues resuming potentially at the start of August, have we?
No, I certainly couldn't find any information on that. From people I've spoken to, it's just, you can picture the Wild West street with the tumbleweed blowing across. It's very much like that at the moment, just waiting for something to happen. I think usually with these kind of things, you know, it comes from higher up, from the top. So we have to see what happens, i.e. at the Premier League level, and how things progress there before we then get a knock-on effect. But it's good to know that, you know, training can resume. I know that some of the younger squads at Tamworth have been, some of the ladies squads and the scholars or academy players, I believe, have been doing a lot of training anyway. But I'm sure for Andrew Danilishan, Gary Smith, Tom Bailey, to get the first team group back together is absolutely massive, because there's a lot of talk across clubs at the moment of players being offered, because some clubs are taking a slightly different view, I guess, on the whole situation. They're organising friendlies, they've offered contracts to players, they're signing players, whereas Tamworth at the moment, as far as I understand, are taking a more slightly cautious approach to things, which I think is probably the right thing to do. Mm. But of course, players at the moment aren't being offered deals for the proposed next season. So it's a case of just making sure the group is together, keep that camaraderie going, keep the team spirit going. And fitness-wise, in terms of training, now we can train with groups of six, albeit at 2 metres apart. What it does mean is that, yes, there's no contact there, but what you can do is very different to running or gym work. You know, you get a ball out, you can actually almost be playing the game of football. You can work tactically on things, and you can certainly work areas of your body and levels of fitness that you couldn't really do outside of that setting, really, Harry.
Yeah, I mean, we were just talking before we came on air, but Leiston have announced several pre-season fixtures which start about a month away, on the 11th of July at home, the weekend after, then the following Tuesday, and then subsequent Saturdays up until the beginning of August. That's very hopeful, in my opinion.
I think it depends which way you look at this, and obviously the listeners to this interview will have their own opinions on it. You know, with the friendlies, and yes, there's a degree of planning and there's a degree of cost involved, but I think some clubs will obviously take the attitude that they need to get these penned in early to have things to aim at, obviously subject to COVID-19 restrictions. And that's just the attitude that certain clubs and you know, officials are taking. Whereas at the moment, a lot of clubs, I think the majority of clubs, actually aren't prepared to stick their neck out and make these plans just at the moment. But I think the next couple of weeks could be quite interesting, really. I think there could be quite a lot of movement in this sense, and it wouldn't surprise me at all to see a lot more coming out from clubs in terms of fixtures and players, and, you know, setting budgets and obviously making plans full steam ahead for the new season, which we haven't got a date for yet. But if things go well with the lifting of restrictions, then there's no reason it shouldn't be. You know, we shouldn't be looking at August.
Yes, really
behind closed doors.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we shall have to see what will happen going forward, and it's changing by the week. Yeah, you know, if we look back to previous podcasts, it's sort of, there's new news every single week about this and different viewpoints, and we'll be speaking to a number of different people over the coming weeks about this. Anything else to add, Kev?
Not really, because it's all guesswork.
Thank
you for, you know, it's been great to have a chat. These weekly podcasts really do keep a lot of us sane and keep us going. So keep up the fantastic work, Harry. And, you know, now that we're allowed to actually visit other people's households following the rules, don't be surprised to see me turn up and request a coffee at some point, Harry.
Oh, that'd be lovely. 2 meters away. Next up on the show. Next up on the show, then, we are going to be hearing from Alex Smith, who plays in the Tamworth Academy and is also signed for the first team. He's just recently launched his own book about motivation, mental health and exercise, and 33% of the profits from that book are being donated to the NHS, which is a great gesture. Alex, thank you for taking the time out to speak to me. I hope you and your family are well in this unprecedented time. I'm going to begin with football. It's been a great season for the Academy Development Squad. And I know myself, you scored numerous goals. How have you found the season?
Yeah, I think pretty much all of the 14 goals that I've scored this season have been assisted by either Harrison James or Tom Hale. So it just goes to show I can probably only score from corners. But I guess we made the transition this season from essentially youth football into the senior men's league. For me, at first, I kind of found that quite challenging. But pre-season, we were all chucked into the deep end. But with a bit of advice from both Mike Fowler, Andrew and Jamie, I think by the second half of my season, it's been my best yet. I think every one of the players in the development squad have been held to higher standards. And I think that's probably why our record has been so good this year.
Yeah, and it's a pretty good record that you have held. And I'm not sure if anyone has watched the highlights from their home games. It's pretty much landslide victories week in, week out, which is great to see. I mean, you're only 17, right?
Yeah.
I mean, making the transition to men's football, I think it's in the Midlands Football Division 4, I think. But not only that, but you've also worked in the first team over the last few seasons, training with the peers and training with the players. And have you also made an appearance once? How have you found that?
Well, obviously the first teamers, I think, are a lot better than the professionals who are my age. So it's kind of great experience going up against them. And obviously I'd like to think that I don't look out of place in the first team training sessions, but you know, I think I'll probably just need a bit more men's football experience before I can earn the trust of Andrew Gass and Tom Bailey. You know, I think maybe a lot of 17-year-olds maybe don't like being pushed out of outside of their comfort zones, but personally, I prefer the pressure. I think it makes me more focused. You know, I was on the bench for one of the cup games this season, and it's good experience just being in and around the dressing room. There's training sessions sometimes where I've been to, and the players that are there, they just freely offer you advice on how to improve. And I think that's really helpful. You know, sometimes we do crossing and finishing. And obviously as a defender, I've got Jaz Singh constantly talking and communicating behind me. And I think that's really helpful. You know, it's important to learn from those who are more experienced than you and soaking up all of their football knowledge that they've gained from their career. But I think that there's no better place for a developing footballer than Tamworth. You know, Andrew's had loads of scholars training with the first team, and at professional clubs, you might maybe get one or two who train with the first team every so often. But I think now at Tamworth, it's gone into double figures now, I think. But I guess if I can show the managers that I'm good enough, then hopefully I'll have some more opportunities to further my experience.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's over 40 academy players in the last couple of years that have made it into the first team. I was speaking to Mike Fowler a couple of weeks ago, and it is a great program. obviously COVID-19 put a huge halt to football back in March. At that time, it must have been pretty devastating considering all the hard work the academy development squad have put in. What was the feeling?
Obviously, it's incredibly frustrating, isn't it, for both the development squad, who pretty much we were near enough unbeaten, and for that to disappear is just incredibly annoying. And you know, for the first team to and for the fans as well, it's annoying, isn't it, really? But I think we'll all come back fighting stronger than ever before. You know, the injustice of not being promoted to the National North, I think personally, will spark some sort of unstoppable motivation each of the first teamers to get what they truly deserve, which is promotion. And regarding the development squad, I think we'll probably be aiming to get every bit of silverware that we can next season.
That's really great, and let's hope, I like that phrase, let's hope we do bounce back better and continue that sort of the great positivity that's sort of the club has been embracing this last season. It's been great before obviously the virus got in the way. Continuing with that sort of positivity, I've previously mentioned that you've just released a book, which have you been spending this time in quarantine working on that? How did it come about?
Yeah, I think it's because of my passion for football that I'm so interested in understanding health psychology. I believe that achieving your goals is very much a mind game. And, you know, there's all sorts of little tricks you can do that you can play on your mind just to help you achieve those goals. But the lessons that I've learned from reading these sorts of books have been incredibly useful for me. So I guess I just thought, why not put them all together in one place so that others can benefit from these lessons as well, and at the same time raise some money for the NHS?
Yeah, so it's 33% of the profits that you make on the book is going into the NHS, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
So what can people expect if they do take a read?
So obviously it's called 51 Secrets to Transform Your Health. There's four sections. So motivation, so how can I set goals? How can I follow through on my goals? And how can I prevent myself from falling back into bad habits? Nutrition, so how can I gain complete control over my appetite instead of it controlling me? Exercise, so how can I optimize my own physical condition in the way that professional athletes optimize their physical condition? And mental health, so how do I improve my concentration and my mood in a moment's notice? And essentially, it's a how-to guide, everything from gaining muscle, losing weight, becoming more toned, to improving focus and deleting any sort of negativity. It's really easy to read. There's a series of formulas that you can start using straight away. And if you've got time, I can probably tell you a couple of the secrets if you want.
Yeah, go on. I'm sure the listeners would love that.
Well, first of all, I talk about making an I want list. So knowing exactly what you want is going to be the foundation that allows you to start heading in the right direction. So obviously, if you don't know what you want, then there's no way you can start taking the right action. So list out as many things as possible. So if you could achieve anything in terms of health and well-being, what would it be? So maybe it might be cutting out snacks throughout the day. Maybe you want to start exercising for at least an hour a day. Or it could be something more ambitious, like running next year's London Marathon, for example. But if you write it out, then you're more likely to do it. And there's space in each chapter where you can write all of that down. Also, setting specific goals. So once you've identified what you want, you need to put a date by which you'll achieve this goal. This will stop any sort of procrastination, and it'll give you something to work towards. Nutrition-wise, there's loads of things you can do. So my auntie is actually a dietitian, and she found it quite funny when I said that you should replace bread with lettuce on your sandwiches. But hear me out. So lettuce is actually a fantastic alternative, especially if you're looking to reduce your carbohydrate intake. It's packed with antioxidants, which have been known to lower risks of heart disease and certain cancers. You know, if you don't know what I mean, the Chinese do it. So it's, if you search something on the internet called Yuxung, you'll find these Chinese lettuce wraps and they're delicious. I've tried them. Also, if you find that you tend to, if you tend to overeat, then maybe you're not drinking enough water. Water is actually a natural appetite suppressant. And there are endless health benefits, on top of which it's only zero calories. There was a study at Birmingham University, and the study found that, the study was on water preloading, which means if you drink a pint of water before each meal, you'll end up eating less. So if you want to make yourself feel fuller, try drinking a pint of water before each meal. And finally, in terms of exercise, I think a lot of people try and improve their physical well-being, but the results aren't necessarily long-lasting. And that's because people tend to go straight to the weight machines, or maybe they only do 5 or 10 minutes of cardio. But long-lasting results actually come from a good metabolism. And the only way to increase your resting resting metabolic rate, it's a bit of a mouthful. In other words, to increase the rate at which your body naturally burns calories, you need to build an aerobic base first. And to build that aerobic base, you need to be doing at least 2 months of aerobic exercise before you hit the weights. Aerobic exercise is moderately paced for about 25 to 45 minutes. So if you can talk while you do it, then you know you're exercising aerobically. And before you know it, you'll be burning calories and you won't even realize it.
Really, really interesting stuff. And so just to finish on then, if people are interested in having a read, I know certainly inspired me to look into it further. There's a preview, and where can people find the book and how much?
So it's only $3.99, and you can get it at my website, which I've created, and that's 51secrets.wixsite.com/website. Or you can go to my Twitter, which is at AlexJSmith06, and the link is in my bio.
Yeah, so I will post the direct link to the website where you can get the book and have a read of the preview if you are interested, into the chat section of our podcast, and also I will put it on the club's social media throughout the next few days, if that's all right with you, Alex.
Thank you, Harry.
No problem. Well, all that's left for me to say is a huge thank you very much for coming on to this evening's podcast. I know the viewers will definitely appreciate hearing from a younger player. We've got a couple of players on this evening, and it's quite interesting to hear it from you, and also to hear about your book. Really appreciate it.
It is with great sadness this evening that we have to announce the sudden and very sad death of our good friend Chris Bradshaw. Chris passed away peacefully at home early on Sunday morning. He was a devoted Tamworth FC supporter and could always be found in the shed on match days along with his son Richard. In recent years, Chris has been the treasurer of the Tamworth FC Supporters Committee, where he kept a close eye on the finances whilst always being calm and steadying influence at meetings. Chris was always on hand to give a helping hand to anyone at the club and was involved with the team builder, walking football and many other club activities. He always had a smile on his face and was willing to stop and chat with fans. He was a man of great dignity and generous spirit and a wonderful sense of humour. He will be sadly missed by all at Tamworth FC. We wish to extend our deepest sympathy and condolences at this time to his wife Jill and all the family. Thank you. Before we continue on with tonight's show and we head into the final interview with Henry Wilder, I'm just going to run through, as always, the different bits and bobs which Lambs Media are currently doing, which you can get involved with. As always, we have the On This Day on our Twitter section. We've also been hosting the Greatest Manager competition, which has now come to an end, and we'll hopefully have some interviews about that that competition next week. However, on Twitter now, we're hosting the greatest player of this season. So you can vote for your player of the season from the 2019-20 campaign. We also have the quarantine quiz, which I've posted into the chat section. Along with that, we're also streaming different games to our YouTube channel. And plenty to be catching up with on the various social media sites throughout the week, as well as tuning into this podcast at 8 p.m. on a Tuesday night. I'll now hand over to Emma Whitehouse, who is going to be conducting this evening's final interview.
Hi, Henry. Hope you're keeping safe and well. Thank you for joining us today.
No worries, Emma. Hope you're safe too.
This season was your first at Tamworth, and I understand your first full season in men's football. Is that right?
Yes, correct. I had two loan spells the season before with a team called Lewis down in the Ryman League and also Basewood in the Northern Premier League. But this is my first full season in men's football.
Okay, so what kind of led you to come to the Lamb? What was the story behind that?
To be honest, there wasn't no plans behind it. I got released from Mansfield the previous season, and I went on trial and I went to a few teams in the summer, but I had no real experience behind me, so it was always hard. And then I got a call saying, didn't even do a training session or anything, got a call saying, do you want to come play down at Sutton Coldfield? Played there and never looked back since, really.
That's great. So, yeah, that was one of our pre-season friendlies, wasn't it, at Sutton?
Yeah.
Seem to remember, yeah. Brilliant. So, how's this season been for you personally? It's a bit of a strange one with obviously how it's finished and, you know, sort of the season being null and void. But how have you found it personally? Any highlights or memorable moments for you?
I think it's a season where I've learned a lot, because obviously being in academy football is completely different to being in men's football. I've learned many things about non-league, about how people work, but I've really enjoyed it on a personal note. You know, just playing football with a smile on my face and, you know, getting the wins that we have. And, well, yeah, like you said, it was a weird one with the null and void, because we were really pushing for promotion. But at the end of the day, there's nothing we can do about it with what's going on at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a difficult one for everybody, isn't it? But we kind of have to take it on the chin and get ready for next year. So any sort of standout moments? I know you're probably going to mention your hat trick, but any other standout moments for you from the season?
I've got to mention a hat trick. If you knew me personally, you'd never believe in my whole career I'd get a hat trick. Standout moments, I'd say for me personally, my favourite game was New Year's Day at Hednesford. Perfect away performance from the team. I don't think anyone put a foot wrong. The fans were a credit, you know, they were out singing them all game. So you could hear, it felt like we were at a home game with the amount we had and how much they were singing. Personally, that's one of my standout moments from the season.
Oh, that's brilliant. And I have to mention Hereford in the FA Cup.
Can we not?
I think most people remember you more from the away fixture than the home one. But yeah, it was an eventful FA Cup run, that one for us.
Yeah, it was. I don't think most people knew who I was then, and they just see me knee sliding.
That's one way of getting yourself known, I suppose. So
yeah, definitely.
Definitely. So you've mentioned about like sort of playing within an academy, and I know this year you've actually been coaching one of our boys academy teams. They've done really well, had some good games. They're heading towards a cup final. So what kind of got you into the coaching side of things? Is that something you want to take forward and continue with?
It's not something I really have any plans for, really. It's one of them where I just thought, I'll try it, see how it goes, and I'll just take whatever comes. I never expected, when I started out with Wayne, you know, never coached previously, I'm still very young, that I'd manage a team who won every game. I think we were going into the semis of a cup, and then we were quite far in another cup, and we won the league, I think, 2 months before the season ended, mathematically. So, yeah, it was just something I just took in my stride, and then I think all the credit has to go to Wayne, really, because he done a lot of the the stuff in the background. But the boys were brilliant, and they helped me out every step of the way. Some of them kids, they're just very, very good footballers at a young age.
They are, and I know they think the absolute world of you. They're always asking after you and what you've been doing and how you've been playing, which is great. So what kind of advice would you give them? You say you're only young yourself, but kind of, you know, they're kind of 11, 12 years of age. What advice would you give them for a football career?
I'd say, you know, talent can only take you so far. Hard work and attitude takes you even further. Just plainly like that, because I've played with players who had everything at that age, but they didn't have a good attitude and they didn't work hard enough, and now they're playing on the Sunday league with their mates. So it does set some players out from the rest.
It does, yeah. It's good advice. I like that. Brilliant. So with the squad that we've had together for the season, we've kind of said what a great team we've had, and you know, even bench has been strong, you know, whoever you've brought on has really contributed. So looking forward, do you think we'll be able to kind of keep that squad together for next season and push on again?
Well, I hope so, Emma, because I couldn't have had a season like I've had this season without any of them. If you look at some of the pedigree we had in that side this year, you know, most of them have played in the conference, some have played in the league. If we could keep the majority of that squad together, then we'd have a very good chance of going for it again next season, regardless of what other teams do.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you say, there's some real good quality in the squad. So, on a lighter note, a bit of a random question here. So if you were to be stuck on a desert island and you could only take two of our current squad with you, who would you pick and why?
Who would I pick? Definitely not Dan Creaney. He's a donut. if you're not Beswick, because we'd fight. I would. Oh, that's a hard one. I would have to take. Do I have to give you a reason? Because I can't think of any of my.
Don't have to.
I would probably take Jazz.
Okay.
So he can get me up in the morning and do his bloody circuits so I don't get fat. And probably Chris Lake, because he's got good banter.
There we go. So there you go. So healthy exercise and some fun. That's a good way to go, I reckon. Excellent. Brilliant. With the COVID-19 obviously affecting everybody, have you been able to sort of stay in touch with your family?
I've been able to keep in touch with them by the phone, but obviously they live down in Sussex, all my family, about four hours away. So it's, no, I haven't been able to go and see them personally, but I've been doing group FaceTimes with them, etc. If that answers the question.
Yeah, brilliant. That's great. So any thoughts on next season, finally, from you? What are you kind of, what's your aim, or what would you like for next year?
It's all confusing at the moment. I haven't really heard a lot, but my aim for next year is to just play as much football as I can. That's all I want to do at the moment, is just play game after game. Hopefully it's in a Tamworth shirt.
Well, hopefully, Henry. We would love to see you back. It'd be great. I know you've been a great asset to our squad this season, and you've played in a few different positions during different games as well.
Yeah.
So,
what about the pitch?
Yeah, it's good to have you on our side, definitely. And I know the kids will love to have you back with the academy as well.
I'd love to be coaching them again.
Yeah, fingers crossed. I know they'll be looking for that as well. So all I'll say is thank you very much for joining us, and it's been good to talk to you.
Thank you, Emma. Look after yourself.
Unfortunately, that does bring this evening's show to a close. I do hope that everyone listening has enjoyed the 8th of our weekly podcasts. As always, please do share this with friends and family. On behalf of everyone at Tamworth FC, thank you very much for listening. Stay alert, stay safe, control the virus and save lives. And I'll see you this time next week.